The first Rashi of Bereshis is something which every time we have an opportunity, I think we should take that opportunity and make it known. Rashi brings down the famous quotation of Rabbi Yitzchak that the Torah was created. Why did the Torah begin? Why did the Torah begin with Bereshis Bora Elokim Es HaShemayim Ves HaOretz? It should have begun, because the Torah is really not a history book, so it should have begun with the episode of Yetzias Mitzrayim, which dealt with the beginnings of Klal Yisrael. Why are we concerned with the creation itself? Creation, there are many things to learn, but there should be a separate book if you want to study that, just like you find throughout the Tanakh. It takes the various kings and it enumerates a number of incidents in their life. And then it says, V'yeser divrei, the rest of this experience through his 50 years of the kingdom, Halehin k'suvim b'sefer divrei ayomim b'malchei Yehuda, or something. So we could have had a separate book, but we know that everything that's in the Torah, from the word Torah, means not history. Torah is not history. It's Torah meaning teaching. So what is the entire Bereshis, the story of creation? We really don't understand creation from reading Bereshis. We understand it in a very elementary level, just to make a little bit of sense. We don't know really what went into the creation of the world of the human being. For example, if we said, how did the human being look? So we think Adam HaRishon was a strong, handsome person, you know, he was creative. Actually, if you had to look at the snake, the serpent, the way it's described in the Zohar and some, and the way Adam was described, you may not recognize, maybe that's where evolution made the mistake, you may not recognize who was the human being and who was really the beast, because Adam HaRishon was humongous, I mean, in physical form. He was diminished greatly in form after the Chet, but the original creation of Adam was totally different. Just to take his garments, according to the Zohar, he was clothed in nails, not skin, but nails. The snake, according to Zohar, was clothed in skin, the way we have it. After the Chet, then nails separated and remained only on your fingertips, and the rest of the body became from ore. According to one Medrash, believe it or not, till Noah's time, there were no fingers. That means they just had like a palm. The creation of fingers, the change of fingers, took place in Noah. In fact, they attribute it to a passage in the end of this Sedra. It speaks here, it says that Lemach had a son and they named him Noah, because it says, Zeh Yenachameinu Mimase, what is the language? Zeh Yenachameinu Mimaseinu Ume'etzvon Yodeinu Min Ho'adomo Asher Uro Hashem. Now, this person will console us from the difficulties of our deeds, Min Maseinu, from our actions that we have to do. Ume'etzvon, meaning from the troublesome work that we have to do with our hands from the earth that God had cursed. Now, if I ask you, why was Noah called Noah? So somebody will say, Noah meaning consolation. The fact is that because of Noah, the world continued. But they called him Noah when he was born, 600 years earlier, not when the flood began. Why was he called Noah? So therefore, the Pasuk tells us for a very simple reason. When he was born, it seems that he had some vision that this Noah would bring about an easing of the lot of man. Because man, because the Pasuk is specific, we say the earth is cursed. The earth is cursed, but we don't know what it means, the earth is cursed. They had no farm equipment, say, Rashi says. Noah is the one who prepared. Till Noah came, they didn't have anything to plow the land. He came up with an instrument that would help them plow the land. It seems that until Noah came, somehow, Rashi says, it gave out thorns and bushes. They weren't able to do anything. So for a little piece of bread, who knows, a ruah adamah, they had to work. Somehow when Noah came, the farming became different. The Medrash, there's a Medrash that goes further and says, until Noah came, they were like all thumbs. They just had the palm of their hands. So go work in a field this way. It's extremely difficult. When Noah was born, he was born like with fingers. And therefore, that was already a change in man, a physical change in man. So there were many physical changes that took place in man. It's not like we would picture a man was born as a finished being. Changes took place. But are those changes necessary in Torah? What is the purpose? So getting back to the first Rashi, so Rashi says the purpose is because the land to teach us that if the non-Jewish world will come to the Jews and say, listimatem, that you drove us out of Israel, you're considered to be listim robbers. So you tell them, what do you mean? The whole land was created by God. And we see in the beginning, Bereshis Barlakim, so you see that Hashem created the land. And who was it created for? For whoever he chooses to give them. And he gave the land to us later. So the land is ours. It was given to us by the original, authentic landlord. The landlord was the Lord who created the land. And he chose to give it to Klal Yisrael. It's clear in the Chumash. So according to that, the entire Sedra of Bereshis was made purely for the purpose of Klal Yisrael, that we should have an answer to the Umos HaOlam, not to decide, was there an evolution or there wasn't an evolution? Let people think that there was an evolution. That's not Negeya. It came primarily to say that we are the landlords of Eretz Yisrael. We are the people for whom God created that land. That's the purpose of the entire story of Bereshis, until Yitzias Mitzrayim with Klal Yisrael. This is what he learns. It's a very important thing because we have to keep on repeating it and repeating it and repeating it. We don't repeat it. The only ones that say this, as I mentioned, are the fundamental Christians. You'll go ahead by the fundamentalists, you know, those that believe in the Old Testament, and they talk to say that the Jews are the chosen people, where they believe ultimately some, you know, what will happen. But they claim that we have the claim to Israel, and you hear them quote this scriptural passage and this medrash. But we don't do that somehow. We're embarrassed to do it. Now, everybody goes ahead and does it, and we're just embarrassed. On the other hand, if we keep on doing it and saying it and saying it, the world will accept it. They'll hear it. You know, the first time, that's human nature. The first time, it's terrible. You don't want to hear it. But you just keep on knocking away and saying it again and again and again, and it does make an impact. So I think that this first Rashi, which starts out, is a very integral, important thing. There's also another important lesson, a beautiful Gemara, in the same vein. And this, again, is a Gemara that's oft quoted. The Gemara says that Leosid Lavo, time to come, when the time of Cheshbon comes about, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring a Sefer Torah, and he will, like, place it in his lap, and he will say, whoever was involved in this Sefer Torah and helping the world come to its tachlis should come and receive their compensation. So immediately, all of the other nations of the world come, and they want to be paid back for compensating. So it says, the kingdom of Rome came first, and they said to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, we created a beautiful civilization, we created many markets, we created many bathhouses, a lot of money, you know, we brought about more wealth in the world, and all we did that was for the Torah. We did it only that the Jews should be Isaac in Torah because of the Torah. So the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, and one after another went. They left. So then another Kempter came in and said, we built a lot of bridges, and we captured a lot of territory, and we waged a lot of wars, and all we did this was for the benefit of Yisrael. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to them, Shaitim, he says, Kol ma she'asisem l'tzeirach atzmachem. You idiots, everything that you did for yourself. It's interesting, it always troubled me. And then I found the kasha was asked, but it always troubled me. So why are you calling them idiots? Call them liars. Tell me you did it for the Jews. So he calls them idiots. Idiots? I mean, liars. You're saying you did it for the Jews. You really did it for yourself. So the answer is that once they came there, they realized that they did it for the Jews. They realized that they did it for the world to come to its tachlis. And the way to do it is that Klal Yisrael will lead the way as they were commissioned to do in the Torah. But Rebbeinu Shel Olam says, you're right. Everything you did for the Jews. But you fools, when you did it, you didn't know, you didn't want to realize that you're doing it for the purpose of the world, for the Jews. You thought you were doing it for yourself. So they weren't liars because it did show up at the end that they did it for the Jews, but they were fools because when they did it, they didn't have the proper intention as why they were doing it. When we say for Klal Yisrael, we don't necessarily mean for Klal Yisrael per se as a certain, like, we're great lording point. But the idea is for us to be able to fulfill our mission of bringing the world to its perfection. So when the Torah is concluded, and it's laying in the chayk of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, he says, now, kindelach, now you could come and get your compensation. So when they come, they also want compensation. So he said, you fools, you're right, you really should have deserved the compensation, because you did do it, you built it for the Jews, but you didn't know that you built it for the Jews. You thought you were doing it for yourself, so you're really considered shaitin. That really came out because when they were first built, I say, oh, from the Brisker Rav, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, Reb Chaim, when they first built a train from Petersburg in Russia to Berlin to go the whole way, so Reb Chaim said the following. He says, you know what this train is for? It's for students of yeshivas that they should be able to travel to Volozhin. So there's like a road to be able to travel. Now, the guy that built the railer, the Shika Apoya, didn't have in mind that he's building it so the yeshivas should go and travel to Volozhin. Now, there's another thing which is even closer to home. In Russia, many years, Russia built a Trans-Siberian railroad. And the idea was it was built with for tens of years, and people put in so many lives and so much to be able to go through tremendous value. And people were screaming, who's in Siberia? What do you need to build a railroad for Trans-Siberia? This wasn't the time of the Tsar. So he said the answer for this, it's like 10,000, tens of thousands of kilometers. So what was the purpose? The answer came out after my wife, with her family, with everybody else, when they were able to escape through Siberia, and they were able to get to Japan and to Shanghai through this railroad. The railroad was hardly ever used before. There was no need to expend that much money. But to bring about a salvation for many Jews to be able to escape from the Germans, that's where the Trans-Siberian Railroad would come in. So they didn't build it for that purpose. But when the Osid Love, when they'll come to get the schar, so you can tell them you're 100% right, it was Bishvil Yisrael. But you're the Shaitim Sheba Elam because you didn't realize why you're doing it and for what reason you're doing it. Just a thought in the Medrash. So it's very similar to the original introduction that we brought down from Rashi from Bereshis. Now, even in its original form, somebody asked me, how did Adam recognize God? What was the relationship between Adam and God? I mean, he was created, right? So what was the first thought of Adam? Did God tell him, who I am, I'm God, I created you? Did he believe him before the Chet? So there's a very interesting medrash. It said the following, when God created Adam, it says he brought all the animals and all the beasts and everything else to Adam, that Adam should give him names. Adam would name each one what they were supposed to be. Then after Adam gave each chaya, each behemah, everything that he gave a name, so he said to the angels, he's going to be smarter than you will be. Pachmaso merubah. Then he proved it. So he took a behemah, a form of a behemah, an animal, a chaya, a knife, a beast, and he said to the angels, tell me what kind of a creation this is. What name? Because what is a name? A name is an expression of your understanding of that. What name should I give these? So they said, we don't know. So they brought him before Adam. The reason they didn't know is because they were totally alien to the physical world. He brought him to this Adam, and he said to Adam, what is this name? So he said, this is an ox, and this is a chamor, and this is a horse, and this is a camel. Adam understood the essence, the makeup, the meaning of this every animal. And because he was a mixture of, but he had a greater chokhmah than they had, because he also knew, we'll say, the chokhmah of this world. And he was able to express what they were. But then it says, Hashem said to him, what is your name? So he said, I really should be called Adam. Why? Because I was created minho Adama. The fact is, I was created from the earth. The popular meaning of Adam is because he came from the earth. Hirsch learns the other way around, that really Adam was named before the earth. There was an earth, but it wasn't called Adama. Adam comes from Hadom, like the footstool. Adam is the spiritual mission, fulfilling the spiritual viceroy, as he calls him, of God in this world. And from Hadom, Adam, And the earth was called Adama because Adam is treading on the earth. Different than the Medrash. The Medrash says Adam is called Adam because he comes from the earth. Hirsch learns that the Adama is called Adama because Adam lives on the Adama. Just to play how you get the word. But anyway, he asked him, what is my name? So he says, your name is Adam. Then he says, what should my name be? So he says, you should be called Adonai, Adoni. Why? Because you are the master of all. So Hashem said, I am Hashem, Adoni. That's the name that Adam had given me. So what we see from the Medrash was that Adam was unique, that he was from both worlds. And if he was from both worlds with such great chokhmah, he understood everything in this world. In the same time, does he really appreciate the spiritual world? So then God said, you come from the earth, you know all the beasts, you know all this. What is your relationship? Who am I? What am I? So he didn't deny God, but he said God is Adoni because God is the master, the creator of the world. So he was what we call a perfect mizug, a perfect assimilation of Adam, Adama, and also Shemayim. Now, when he asked him what he was, the Bali Musa stopped, so why didn't he say, I have a heavenly spirit, I was created from the heavenly spirit? One would think that he has so much chachma and so much wisdom, right? And the essence of the man is really from heaven, the Ruach Chaim, the spirit of life. Yet when God asked him, who are you or what are you, what is your nature? He didn't say, Mina Shemayim, I should be called Shemayimi. He said, I should be called Adam because I come Minho Adama. To the contrary, why does he go to the lowest level? I mean, Adama, you're a creation of the spiritual forces. So they say that the Chochmah, the idea, it says, what was the gist of the Medrash? The thrust of the Medrash was that God was testing the Chochmah, the wisdom of Adam, to give names, to perceive the entire nature of each creature. That's why Adam was able to distinguish between a chaya, between a behemoth, and a lion, and a tiger. He was able because he grasped, Shlomo HaMelech had that wisdom also, to grasp the essence of every creation. By answering that he came Minho Adama, he grasped the essence of his own creation. Although he was created with the Spirit of God, yet man can sink. Elho Adama, he can fall so fast. And he could go so low that indeed you could say that there is no spirit of God within him. It's totally like Minho Adama. So because Adam HaRishon understood the nature of every creation, he also understood that moment, right? The lowest level to which man can sink. Although the Malachim look at this man, and it said in the Medrash, when they looked at Adam, they started to say Shira. They thought it was a divine spirit, a god. So that's the greatness of Adam. Yet he can go so low that, as the Medrash again says, they could tell him, what do you pride yourself? Yitush, a little mosquito, Kedamach, was created before you. So this is the idea that he gave the name. Giving the name meaning realized the essence of every creation and his essence. And he realized his relationship to God, right? Yet, although he realized this relationship to God, so he was ready to hide, thinking that he's from God. Denying that there's a God. You know, man is a very, very fickle individual. They bring a beautiful case. It's said by Chava, after she ate from the tree, so it says, she immediately gave it to her husband to eat. So Rashi quotes the famous Medrash. Why did she give it to her husband? So Rashi says, so that she shouldn't die. And if she dies, he'll live and he'll perhaps get another wife will be created. So there is this personal jealousy, so she gave it to the husband. So Chevi could ask a question. The only reason Chava ate from the Eitz Hadas was because the snake pushed her and said, oh, you touched it and nothing happened to you, you're not going to die. So it seems that this was very enticing, the fruit. And the snake told her she's not going to die, and she sees she's not going to die, so she knows she's not going to die, so she's going to eat from the Eitz Hadas, right? But what happened as soon as she finished eating from the Eitz Hadas? She filled up her desires, she had no more passion for it. She runs immediately to give it to Adam. Why? Because she's going to die, and he's going to marry somebody else. What do you mean you're going to die? You just ate from the fruit because you were convinced you're not going to die. So all of a sudden you're going to make Adam eat because you're afraid that he's going to die. So what does this teach us? a very interesting part of man's nature. The nature is what Nagias can make. They gave the famous story. The famous story was that a bunch of Saurim, have you heard it? It's brought down in the fables, I think. A bunch of governors of Saurim, Pritzim, got together. And one says, I have a Jew in my territory that is extremely brilliant. You can't stump him by asking a question. He knows the future, everything else. So the other one says, all right, so they made up, next time we have our meeting, bring this person along, and we'll see what'll happen. So they brought him along, and then the strongest one, the oldest one, said the following, I'm going to ask you a question, all right? And we'll see if you know the future or not. And the question is, what day will you die on? So they asked the Jew, when are you going to die? So obviously they prepared this question because they wanted to prove that he can't know. So then he asked them this question, and if they'll answer that he's going to die in 1999 or something, so the guy will take out his gun and it'll kill him right away. So the Jew was in a quandary. What should he answer him? So the Jew answered him the following, I will die in the day that you die. So right away, this guy wanted to take out his gun off, and then his hand like froze on the pistol. So everybody says, so why don't you kill him? So he says, what do you mean I'm afraid? He said that he's going to die when I die today. If I kill him, then I'm going to die this day. Here you have the same person. Here he was ready to show that this Jew is dumb, a fake. He doesn't know what's going to happen in the future and so on, and he called his own. Yet, when it was a little Nagias, but he said that I'm going to die when he dies. How could I kill him? So it seems that a person, whenever he has a Nagias, meaning a Nagias, a tendency or a desire to do or to prove something, that becomes like a reality. Chava wanted to eat. She's not going to die. But then she's afraid maybe Adam will make. All of a sudden, she's afraid she will die because it has to do with the person's nature. He looks at everything subjectively. And this is why this was a concept. So this is just a thought that they bring down and that we could learn from the many lessons of here. At the end of the sentence, before the flood, they lived long. After the flood, we'll learn there was a dramatic change in the longevity of a person. They went down to 100 years or to 80 years or whatever it is by Avraham Avinu. I mean, after the flood, it went all the way down. It jumped from 600, 700 years. It fell all the way to 100 years. Why? Because the physical change that took place in the world, in the water, in the climate, in the air, all of that took place as the flood because of the change. Now, Hirsch said that also had a very good purpose because a person would realize that he wouldn't live forever. In fact, he says at the end of the Sedra that God says, Leodin ruchi beodom. How does Hirsch interpret that? We once spoke of that. The end of this Sedra, Hashem says, Vayinochem Hashem, Vayisatze vel libe. He had a painful feeling. What happened to man? So then God said, Emches odom, Asher barasi. I will wipe away all the people that I created. Now this shows that Hashem had seen the evil of man, and therefore he had to change the whole climate. Now, it wasn't only destroying man. There was an entire change in the lifespan of man. When it says, Lo yadun ruchi la'odam la'elam b'shigam hu basar, meaning my spirit will not remain to judge man forever because he is like flesh, and his days will be 120 days. So Hirsch said, what does this mean? God felt that as long as man will be in this world for a long period of time, there's just no way that he will fulfill that which he has to do. The change that will occur will give you a fresh start and a new way to rehabilitate mankind. So that's what he said. Bishigamu Bosa, being that man is made out of flesh, being that man has within him this tendency, so therefore, I'm going to limit him for a short period of time. Me'ov yesrim shana. And this, in a way, will inhibit man. So this may have been one of the reasons why the flood took place in the form that it did, because the flood taking place in the form that it did also brought a different nature into the world, that man became sick. Before that, there was no such thing. In fact, one of the Tanoim said that I have to thank the generation of the flood for my allergies. He used to have headaches. So he said because of the change that took place. For example, now everybody's suffering sore throats from the change of the weather. We have to thank the flood for that. There was, otherwise, he had like an air-conditioned dome with perfect non-humidity. It was a beautiful world, and a person wouldn't get sick, and there was nothing wrong. But afterwards, the person became weak and so on. Therefore, even the diet changed. That's why they permitted one to eat meat afterwards. Many say because of the change that took place in the world, in the atmosphere, and so on. So this is why they fell down. There was a spiritual reason which brought about a physical change to curtail. The purpose was to curtail the excesses of man, and God considered one of the ways of curtailing that was through the lifespan. That's the idea of 120 years. 120 years is not like now we use it in the form of a bracha. But originally, when it was first uttered, the 120 years, it was saying, according to Hirsch, that 120 years would be like the maximum that I would allot man to ascend to because of man's downfall. The downfall, which we mentioned the other day, which asked, was brought about by the Bnei Elohim in sentence 2, the sons of the godly race saw the daughters of man, and it says, Vayikru lohem noshim mikol asher pochoru. What did they do? What was this downfall that God reacted so strongly? It was an immorality, a terrible immorality. If you see, it says there that the sons of God. Now, there is an interpretation that Bnei Elohim is angels, the sons of the fallen angels. Rashi brings the expression, two expressions. Rashi first says, Bnei Elohim, he says, Bnei Hasorim. That means Sorim can be interpreted really in two different ways. Sorim means like a leader, a sar, but it can be like a heavenly officer, a heavenly sar, or it could be a sar, meaning of a elite type of a family here. So there are really two interpretations that Rashi brings down. Let me just quote to you Rashi on this point. B'nei Elohim, Rashi says, B'nei ha-sorim ve-ha-shoftim. One interpretation was Sorim v'shoftim. You'll see why I'm bringing Rashi. Sorim v'shoftim would seem human beings, correct? Sorim, a sara, an officer. Shofet is a judge, the elite. The other interpretation he brings down, B'nei Elohim ha-sorim ha-hochim b'shlichusei shomokein. Those who are sorim, who go in the mission of God. This caused a lot of confusion in interpretation. Normally you would interpret this, sorim, that go in the mission of God, meaning the heavenly creation, sar shel yam, sar shel mitzrayim. The angels are called sorim. So according to this, you would have the angels rebelling against God, and when they were here, we'll say, in the form of human beings, they defected. They defected and they asked for amnesty, whatever, so they wouldn't go back. But that would assume that there is such a thing as a heavenly mixture between, it's just an angel consorting with a human being. You could also say in Rashi, that's how some do learn, and there's a whole... You could say even in this Rashi that Bnei HaSorim HaHolchim B'Shluchoi Shomokein could mean the sons of the finer element. We know that there are people on this earth who also go B'Shluchoi Shomokein. So maybe even the religious elite who go, the first Sorim means just the secular dignitaries and officers. The second would be even those who recognize their mission of God on this earth, even they also were succumbed to the temptations and deviated from the proper behavior. So in Rashi itself, everybody quotes Sorim as angels. You don't really have to say it. In Rashi, you could even interpret Sorim as being those who fulfilled the mission of God. But what did they do? Immorality. They took women, it says, if you look at the expression, Vayikru lohem noshim, Mikol Asher Bochoru. They were totally immoral. Now the literal pshat of Noshim meaning that they didn't care if there was a woman married, the woman wasn't married, it didn't matter. And if they saw a woman that they desired, they would forcibly take her. So this was the terrible behavior. The Medrash learns also, Mikol Asher Bechoru, the immorality was worse than that. There was also homosexuals, and there were everything, every sexual type of behavior, no matter how degenerate it was practiced by that generation. They say, Mikol Asher Bechoru. That's implied in this phrase, from all that they have chosen. All right? So this was the actions of man that brought about this dramatic change in the lifespan. Now, this itself is dramatic. Here you have, we'll speak about Adam HaRishon, how far an Adam could fall from being on the highest level down to the lowest depths. The idea of God knowing, of course, is something which is, I mean, why did God put Adam and Eve in Gan Eden and give them the choice, whatever the choice was, if he knew what they would do? Obviously, he knew what they would do. So this is what the Rambam, the climate, the stadium in which the game of life is being played in. The original question of Avodah Mechaber. Let me go away. Because if Avodah Mechaber, he would not have succumbed to temptation in making the wrong choice at that point, then that would have remained the major stadium. Once he began to fall, then, of course, there is no end to the depth that he would fall in. So God says, it seems that it's endless for man, this tumbling that he tumbled in his sin is endless. It's never ending. It's become corrupted and so on. I have to do something. So they said, but didn't God know it would be that way? Well, God gave Adam a choice. Adam would have made the right choice. Nothing of this would have happened. So didn't God know what choice Adam would make? So that's the original question that is posed, that how could there be free will in any choice if God knows what it will be? This potentially was there in the plan of God. The idea is, if we say the 120 years was a change, then this was there. There's a time to call in the period of 120 years, which originally was a backup period, if it will become necessary, okay? The question... See, it doesn't mean that's a new thing that was never created, a new thought, a new idea. We have to say that when God created man and placed him in Gan Eden, all the changes that took place, either in the physical aspect of man or the mission of man or the climate and everything else, were all originally prepared to take place if it would ever have to be used. Now, this, for example, always troubled me. You'll find that the Yetzer Hara of Aveda Zora was so strong, correct, that it was taken out of temptation. It means people were succumbing so much to idolatry that God, that the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah prayed to God that to deaden like this temptation of Aveda Zora. So I mean, so how is that? So it seems that man doesn't have the same degree of choice or not. I mean, so the world already had come to its, man had been defeated. He had chosen wrong. So it seems that even there, this was also prepared in a sense that this would be a fallback position, that even if all of these bad things happen, then we would have to change certain aspects of man's desire even, if necessary. There was room made to change that aspect of temptation, of Aveda Zora, of removing it, and still be able to fulfill the purpose of creation in man making the proper choice. So this was all b'machshava tchila. Knows, yet gives us a free choice. Now, he knows what we're going to do, yet he wants us to go through the same thing. This was an unraveling of the original creation, of the person of Adam and so on.